From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In an op-ed on Saturday in the Washington Post, Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg called on Congress to regulate companies like his. He outlined four areas in which he thinks the internet could benefit from regulation: harmful content, election integrity, privacy, and data portability. Zuckerberg's call comes in the wake of several damaging stories centered on the company's practices. First, the horrific mass shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand, that left 50 people dead, was live-streamed by the perpetrator on Facebook and shared widely. Facebook is also among those social media companies that have allowed hateful content to proliferate online and has now said that it will ban white supremacist and white nationalist content. Second, the Department of Housing and Urban Development last week filed a surprise lawsuit against the company for engaging in housing discrimination by allowing advertisers to target specific demographics and thereby violate the Fair Housing Act. We turn now to Ramesh Srinivasan, director of the Digital Cultures Lab and associate professor of information studies and design and media arts at University of California, Los Angeles. He's written several books, including Whose Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World, and a book co-authored with Adam Fish called After the Internet. He's been a frequent guest on our program on these tech issues. Welcome back, Ramesh.
Hey, Sonali. Nice to reconnect with you and great to be with the listeners and viewers.
So first, let's talk about this op-ed calling for by Zuckerberg calling for Facebook and other companies to be regulated. On the one hand, you might imagine, okay, well, this is a good step. It's nice to see Zuckerberg admitting that Facebook deserves and needs to be regulated. On the other hand, it made me also react in a way that called into question the impunity of a CEO setting the agenda, because he's basically saying, here's what I think you should do, Congress. And of course, Congress may likely take their lead from him, because too many members of our Congress don't even understand how exactly Facebook works. What do you think?
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. I mean, it's a PR move. I mean, it feels good. The affect behind, you know, Mark Zuckerberg offering, you know, some proposals to rein these pervasive problems we're seeing all around us, it sounds good. But if you look at the substance of what he proposes, and you also look at the situation, the environment which Zuckerberg and Facebook are taking advantage of, which is the absence of critical literacy and understanding of how to rein in tech monopolies in the making, you can see that all of this works really well or is supposed to work well for Facebook's benefit, but doesn't necessarily represent any form of real deep intervention that can stem the tide from all the problems we're witnessing. So, you know, just to give you an example, Facebook says, for example, we will weed out harmful content. Of course, in everyone, and this is something that Zuckerberg wrote in the Washington Post article, and, you know, all of that sounds great, but we don't really know how is Facebook going to weed out harmful content. How does it decide what is considered harmful and what isn't? Are these sort of blind promises that, I mean, do we have to just sort of engage in blind trust? Do we trust algorithms somehow to weed out this content? Do we trust algorithms that are informed by human laborers in invisible places, often working for menial wages? We even found a story that came out just a couple days ago that prisoners in private prisons are doing content moderation, that is, looking up offensive content for Facebook and other tech companies. So there's a lot behind, you know, just sort of behind the curtain or underneath the rug that really needs to be unpacked. But it's to Zuckerberg's benefit to make these proposals because he's operating in a landscape where very few of our politicians and supposed regulators in this country really seem to have much will to do much about the problem, let alone much understanding of the nature of the problem, which, you know, I can speak to in quite a bit of detail. And I have a new book that's looking at all these issues that's going to be coming out in October called Beyond the Valley with MIT Press.
And we'd love to, of course, have you back to talk about that. So in his op-ed, Zuckerberg says, lawmakers often tell me we have too much power over speech. And frankly, I agree. I've come to believe that we shouldn't make so many important decisions about speech on our own. So those two sentences, I thought, were sincere, or at least sounded sincere, and were on the money. But then he said, so we're creating an independent body so people can appeal our decisions. We're also working with governments, including French officials, on ensuring the effectiveness of content review systems. Wouldn't Zuckerberg be able to easily sidestep all of these independent body and these other methods that he is claiming will address these concerns by simply laying bare transparent fashion how Facebook's algorithms work? Isn't that the sort of proprietary thing that he is hiding, the secret formula that he has hit upon?
I mean, not simply that. Facebook should really come clean about the nature of why we see what we see. Facebook should come clean about what data about us is being collected. It should come clean on how that data could be used by third parties. And per this, sort of claim that Facebook will be partnering with sovereign local governments, what that actually ignores is how that could actually perpetuate, in many cases, the abuses of authoritarian governments and fascist governments in different parts of the world. Just to give you a simple example involving Facebook, look at the country of Burma or Myanmar with the Rohingya community that has been facing a genocide and forced expulsion from Myanmar. The Rohingya community was designated as a terrorist group by Facebook, and therefore its content was blocked when folks over there were trying to film the abuses and get it to circulate far and wide, while the Myanmar state government, which is responsible for this genocide, all led by the generals in the country, were seen as the sanctioned authority, the one that Facebook would respect. So, under its worst intentions, these are examples of Facebook actually facilitating power and inequity and the abuses of vulnerable and already marginalized peoples. Perhaps in its best intentions, we can assume ignorance and naivete. I haven't been able to find this information on the record, but some folks I've spoken to off the record have told me that in Facebook's entire so-called global governance team, we're talking about less than 20 people who are responsible for really thinking about Facebook's relationship to its users and therefore its communities, the communities of users across the world. So again, when technology companies are based in one part of the world, elite parts of the world are run and invested in by rich, generally white male folks. They're going to have, even if they have great intentions, which I'm not sure is the case here, they're going to have pernicious, if not devastating, effects when it comes to vulnerable communities that have now collided with their technologies thousands of miles away. And remember, Facebook benefits from that scaled out usage, right? Those people, poor brown, black people who are now colliding with the internet and using Facebook tools and platforms like WhatsApp, which is another place of great amounts of misinformation and hate speech, they work to Facebook's benefit. They represent the majority of the population. Increasingly, they represent the majority of Facebook users for sure. And so Facebook profits off of this so-called accessibility. But in so doing, it actually exports its, at best, naive approaches toward those people. And unfortunately, as an effect of all of it, the worst case where vulnerable people get targeted, even killed, thanks to the ignorance that's built into Facebook's platforms and policies.
Now, Facebook says it is taking some measures to express and explain why it does what it does. On Monday, there was a news report saying that Facebook now has a new tool that explains why you're seeing certain posts in your news feed. So there's a little feature that apparently will come up saying, why am I seeing this post? I haven't seen it actually show up on my newsfeed yet. And also that Zuckerberg in a conversation over the weekend said that he wants to create a special section on Facebook that will where dedicated news could be published, a special section dedicated to news alone, and that he is even considering paying publishers to put their content there. So clearly Zuckerberg knows that Facebook is in big trouble and that he needs to be doing something about it. But in the absence of all of that, of truly clear action, what sort of regulation should we call for, Ramesh? And what sort of regulation has already been proposed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great to hear that, you know, that Zuckerberg is reacting to the heat. I think that, you know, Facebook telling us why we see what we see seems like a good first step, but I'm not sure that that step is quite as clear as it seems based on how Zuckerberg speaks about it. What we should know is what about us is Facebook targeting when it makes that content, including news content, visible to us. To your question, which is, I think, a much more important question than, you know, these sort of vague statements and, you know, feel-good promises that are made by Facebook and Zuckerberg. There are a lot of steps we can take that can right here and now balance out the digital world and ensure that this extraction of data and our attention that has created such wealth in the hands of such few people and will continue to do so even more with AI systems and automated systems that are really the norm for these companies, Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and so on. We can rein all of this in right now. And there are several ideas. One Elizabeth Warren has raised is reining in what she sees as tech monopolies. Her point is that these companies can't be platforms, yet also use the data that is gathered through their platforms to knock out, basically wipe out anyone on their platform itself. So Facebook has WhatsApp, right? So, but WhatsApp now can inform Facebook, or Instagram can inform WhatsApp, or WhatsApp and Instagram can inform Facebook. It gives it quite a bit of advantage over any other potential social media competitor. We can see that example even more directly when it comes to Amazon and so on. So Warren's proposal is an interesting one. Her point is that you can't monopolize by being both the marketplace as well as have such a decided advantage so that you can actually outcompete anyone on your marketplace, if you can imagine that. But I think it's a much larger set of issues. Americans and really people across the world need to know right now that we need to know what data about us is being collected. And that is not simply about Facebook or Amazon or any other company or even Google. It's really about understanding what data is being surveilled about us, how that data is being captured, where does that data go, how long is that data being retained, meaning like sitting in various databases, how is data about us in the different parts of our lives being brought together or aggregated, right? So it's one thing for Facebook to know all this stuff about me that I post on Facebook. I think we all kind of understand that that's information we give to Facebook. But what happens when our credit card records are cross-aggregated with our Facebook data? Is that something we're okay with? What happens when, you know, the so-called black box of computer, you know, computational formulas that Facebook uses is used to manipulate us in certain ways based on what the algorithms are producing or what they're optimized for? So there are much bigger issues. What I'm arguing for in the new book, Beyond the Valley, is a data bill of rights. And what that bill of rights looks like is it places people and users front and center rather than just continuing to push forward private corporate power. And the way that's going to work is people will have to give, you know, the companies will have to have the burden of telling us and informing us of what they're doing with our data. They will have to be very clear how that data is being used. They will also have to be clear how they're monetizing that data, how they're profiting off that data. They'll have to explain to us what other forms of data they're using. And they will have to make promises to the wider public, especially as they move into greater and greater use of automated and AI systems with humans as an afterthought. You know, maybe we employ a few prisoners or people in the Philippines to, you know, help their AI systems. They have to do way better in terms of employment and labor, given that these companies are worth about $1 trillion. they can certainly afford to not contribute to ever widening global and domestic inequality.
Ramesh, going back to the issue of specifically privacy, in his Washington Post op-ed, privacy was one of the four areas that Zuckerberg said needed regulation. And again, at the risk of allowing him to set the agenda, what do you make of his call for the U.S. and other countries to adopt the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, that went into effect relatively recently? He said, "I believe it would be good for the internet if more countries adopted regulation. Regulation such as GDPR as a common framework. Is that enough?"
I don't think it's sufficient in itself, but I do appreciate that that was offered. And it sort of surprised me in a way. It was actually, of all of the offers that were put out in the Washington Post article, it was the one that seemed most on point. The GDPR has had some successes. A number of the big tech companies have been levied with lawsuits that they've had to pay, particularly Google. It has been responsible for employing large numbers of people. It is a little bit more expansive in terms of this data bill of rights idea that I'm discussing, but it doesn't have the regulatory teeth necessarily to deal with these issues of how these companies seem to be closer and closer, to, if not already, monopolies. And I think that part of it also needs to be focused on. I think that simply looking at the big tech companies as the problem here is actually a little bit short-sighted, because remember, as I said earlier, Sonali, almost everybody and anybody these days is accessing our data through various providers, through data brokers, who we almost never speak about. So we really need to kind of get to it on a much deeper level and understand how almost every industry imaginable, private corporate industry imaginable, is making incredible amounts of money off of the use of data through predictive analytics that is then informing various algorithmic choices, for example, around how to offer health insurance. Give you a simple example of this that I use in the book. John Hancock, one of the bigger and older life insurers, has now completely taken out its traditional life insurance policies and is only using various sort of hidden forms of data to extend to us various types of insurance policies. Is that something we're okay with? Simply kind of pointing the finger at Facebook doesn't resolve that issue.
Do CEOs of companies like Facebook ever admit that they are allowing all of this data sharing to happen, not just across various platforms that they own, but across to corporations in other industries that they're basically monetizing our data?
Yeah. I mean, in Facebook's case, I mean, it was pretty clear when the whole Cambridge Analytica story blew up, no one thought that there was anything wrong with Facebook being an ecosystem by which third parties like the Russian government or Cambridge Analytica could kind of build on top of for their own aims to target people. That was not seen as a bug. That was not seen as a problem. It was seen as a feature. So I think it's really important to know the prevailing attitude of Silicon Valley, where people's personal lives, privacy, and the lives of vulnerable communities are often seen as an afterthought. And there's such a level of naivete and ignorance, perhaps because of the demographics in power in Silicon Valley, that they wouldn't even know it. Now, I again, to this point that you're making, excellent question. It's not simply Facebook that's providing data to third parties. In many cases, they have some stricter policies in the tech companies themselves. But those companies not only are acquiring other companies and spreading across multiple other industries. For example, Google involved with Project Maven, the Department of Defense, which is a drone killer program, a drone terrorist program, attempting to target people. But the terrorism is really coming by those who are producing the drones and pushing them out. It's actually just that our data, we have what are called digital footprints that we release all the time. Anytime we use our credit card, anytime we go to a drugstore and use one of those discount cards, anytime we use our GPS, we're releasing data. And that data goes somewhere. It's not simply to Facebook. It goes to data brokers in many cases. And that data can be bought and sold. So that's right. Something the GDPR has been trying to rein in, which is, I think, really good. And it's something that we really need to get on top of right away.
And finally, let's talk about the lawsuit from the Housing and Urban Development Department that Facebook faced starting last week. Many people were surprised by this. Some wondered out loud how it was that HUD head Ben Carson would suddenly start to care about enforcement of the Fair Housing Act. But this particular lawsuit contends that because advertisers can specify which demographics should look at ads for housing, that it violates the Fair Housing Act's provisions, that there not be discrimination. How important is this lawsuit?
Well, it's good. It's good that any sort of regulatory party is peering in there and trying to understand how this, you know, incredible like trove of incredible of just detailed granular data that Facebook has can be abused and is being abused all the time, right? And we have talked about this so many times, Sonali. As per why why Carson and HUD are involved in this, you know, this is a very strange political moment that we're in, to put it mildly. There's been a backlash against the tech companies by the Republicans and the Trumpians and so on. That's because the tech companies, by and large, have supported mainstream Democratic candidates, not necessarily progressive ones, who would also enact various sorts of anti-monopoly measures, like Elizabeth Warren, probably, and others, maybe Bernie Sanders and others, have spoken out. So, you know, there's a little bit of this populist stuff going on where, you know, bashing Google and Facebook is something that is seen as potentially politically advantageous, maybe even populist, by the Republicans right now. You know, it speaks.
But do you agree that there is housing discrimination likely happening because of the way in which Facebook allows advertisers to target demographics?
It certainly has the potential of occurring. I would have to look at the specific actions that are occurring. That data wasn't available in the story I looked at, but the potential for such abuse is obvious on Facebook, and that would violate a HUD Act. It would violate the law. So I'm glad that Facebook is being targeted in this way, even if it is coming out of this like petty and silly, you know, political populism.
Well, Ramesh, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll certainly keep a lookout for your forthcoming book. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I always enjoy it. Thank you so much, Sonali. Have a great day.
You too. My guest has been Ramesh Srinivasan, Director of the Digital Cultures Lab and Associate Professor of Information Studies and Design and Media Arts at UCLA. His books include Whose Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World and After the Internet. We've been discussing several recent stories on Facebook and Zuckerberg's call for regulations. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.